It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
To Hart on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
House the three and the lead. You betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner.
PJ Tucker.
Gordon by
Gordon Ranch.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What is up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, the sixth episode this week, the overtime episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is this, you know, awesome, delicious, incredible protein bar, and you can check them out. You know, I've been a big fan of them since I've started trying them, and you can check them out at builtbar.com, and you can actually get $10 off your very first order by using promo code Locked On at builtbar.com. Now, as always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and the founder / managing editor of clutchcitycontrolroom.com, your home for all things Houston hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin. Of course, you can follow our show at Locked On Rockets and also the blog at Clutch City CR. And if you appreciate what we're doing here, do me a favor, hit the subscribe button on Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast, drop us a review, leave us some stars. I would appreciate it. Here comes part two of the Locked On Live event episode with Roosh Williams and Rockets Wire's Ben DuBose. Had to split it up into two shows because we came in real hot at almost an hour long, or a little over an hour, actually. So here is the second half of that show right now. I wonder which lineup is going to be the lineup that finds the most success in this one, because I think usually it's really easy when everybody's healthy to point to, oh, you know, the starting lineup is more than likely the closing lineup. And that's been the case for much of the season. But then with the return of Eric Gordon, does he become a closer? Is he the guy that Mike D'Antoni trusts, you know, at the end of a game? You know, is Austin Rivers potentially going to be on the court at the end of the game, depending on how his playmaking goes? What do you guys think that go-to end-of-game lineup is going to look like?
So what I'm interested in, and I'll toss this to Roosh because I know he's not the world's biggest Jeff Green fan, but I agree. We had a comment a minute ago that Jeff Green is especially important as a release valve for Harden, another creator. If P.J. Tucker is cold, now you're not going to pull P.J. Tucker. I agree with that. But would you look at it potentially a lineup where you go bigger and you have both Green and P.J. out there along with perhaps Robert Covington? Would you have a lot of bigs to get Jeff Green on the floor given his abilities as a pseudo creator, a passer? I don't think you're going to take either Tucker or Covington off the floor when the game's being decided just because they're so important to you defensively. Maybe if one of them is ice cold, you consider it. But I do think that there might be a temptation. We spent a lot of the podcast talking about Rivers and Gordon and House, the backcourt guys that can step up, or perimeter guys, I should say, in the absence of Westbrook. Do you see a scenario, Roosh, where you might think about closing or coming close to closing with Jeff Green? Because I could see his creativity. You know, somebody mentioned in that 2016-2017 parallel, Nene was so crucial against Oklahoma City. Jeff Green, he's not the traditional big that Nene is, but in terms of being able to create his own offense, you can see some overlap there. What's your thought about Jeff going into the series?
Yeah, I mean, look, before you said anything, that's exactly where I was going to go, because Jeff Green, quite frankly, you can make a very strong argument that Jeff Green is the second best playmaker with the ball in his hands after James Harden and Russell Westbrook. Well, third best, but with Westbrook out, he's the second best guy on the ball that can create for others. I was going to say, I think a lot of the series is going to come down to Jeff Green and P.J. Tucker hitting corner threes, you know, because that's how they're going to keep Adams on the floor. He's going to help over, kind of like how Brook Lopez does, and they're just going to dare us to shoot those threes. And if they're off, then they're off. But if they hit, things change. I do think closing the game or closing games with Jeff Green might be the way to go. I don't think that Oklahoma City is going to double a lot, just based on what I've seen their fan base say. I've seen their fan base say Donovan doesn't like to double. I haven't run the games back yet. I haven't had a chance to, the ones against Oklahoma City. But and also, doubling Harden pretty much happens because Russell can't shoot, and that's what teams dare you to do. So without Russell, I think teams are just going to man us up for the most part. Honestly, a lineup I like a lot, and I always talk about that Hornets game when they were down 20-0, but it kind of opened my eyes.
If you put DeMarre Carroll in this lineup, I swear.
I'm about to. So you're going to need – look, an alternative to going small. We can do the thing where we go PJ and McLemore, and if the threes are hitting and if they're scrambling on defense, things are working out.
Like the Toronto game.
Right, but you have to be versatile, especially against a team like Oklahoma City, because they have a balanced attack. I've said this on Twitter. They have three guys that score 19 a game. Then they have Chris Paul at 18 a game. They have guys, they have, I think, six or seven guys that can shoot 35% or above from three that are reasonably in their rotation. So they don't jump out on paper like, oh, my God, LeBron, so, you know, Kawhi, Paul George. But they're very balanced and they're very stable across the board. So if we go, you know, strong in one direction being offense, that could backfire. So you have to have contingency plans to be able to kind of go the opposite. So what I'm saying is you get a lineup of Jeff Green, Robert Covington, DeMar Carroll, Harden, and then either Gordon or Austin Rivers for, you know, guard to guard the guards, basically.
Of course, you got to get DeMar Carroll out there.
I knew it.
I knew it was coming.
I'm telling you.
If you're in the chat, say something. Wink at us.
Right? He's there. He's hidden.
What else are they doing at the bubble? Come on.
This is the reason, though, because you need – if we have length – look, small ball will work if we got a bunch of 6'7 dudes. So if you got DeMar Carroll, Jeff Green, Robert Covington, now you have three guys with length that can switch, that also have strength and pretty good defensive instincts. Jeff Green on the lower end of that spectrum, but he's defended well for the most part in Houston. So like, I think that's one of the ways that you have to go. You have to be able to – like, you need guys – look, and let me just be clear while we're here. I don't think DeMar Carroll is going to go score 15 points and have awesome games. I think he's going to have games where he has, like, 4 points.
He's backpedaling now, guys.
4 points, 1 of 3 from three, 2 steals, 3 assists, you know, but he does scrappy, like, hustle play things. He deflects balls. He, you know, he gets offensive rebounds. He tips passes.
He makes winning basketball plays. He's very similar to PJ Tucker in that regard, that they, a lot of what they do will never show up on a stat sheet. And you look at their box score at the end of the night and you think, okay, this guy had a very so-so game, you know, ones and twos everywhere across the stat sheet, but he makes winning basketball plays just like PJ Tucker does.
Exactly, and that's exactly what P.J. Tucker does. I mean, P.J. Tucker is shooting, I think, 20-something percent from three in the bubble, but he's out there. Why? Because he plays incredible defense and he hustles and he knows the scheme. Like, DeMar Carroll's not as good of a defender as him, but he's pretty damn good. Now, back to Jeff Green. I don't think Oklahoma City's going to double, but we've seen a lot of plays or a lot of action where Jeff Green gets the ball at the top of the key and we run screens kind of around him. And then you force the defense to shift, and sometimes they'll go with the cutter and they leave a lane wide open for Jeff Green. And even when they don't, when he's manned up, he's been very long and like kind of finishing around at the rim. And he's also been kicking to the corner. So I, as much as I hate to say that we have to rely on Jeff Green, I'm with Ben. I think that a lot of the Rockets' success can come from Jeff Green as a secondary playmaker on the ball.
Mm-hmm. Now, one other point. Hang on, really quick, Ben. I want to kind of have a counterpoint to that, because I actually feel almost the exact opposite, in the sense that I think we're legitimately going to see a lot of stretches where Harden, Gordon, and Rivers are actually sharing the court at the same time. Like, legitimately, I'm making that claim right now.
Well, during the game, yes. I was just talking about the closing lineup.
Okay, because but even as a potential closing lineup, I'm putting it out there. Okay. I think we're going to see that alongside Robert Covington and PJ Tucker. I think that even if Jeff Green, because I think the argument there is, as your secondary, you know, facilitator, playmaker, yeah, Jeff Green becomes, you know, can be a safety valve offensively. But if you have, you know, Gordon and Rivers out there as well, then there's not really an excuse for Harden, you know, if Harden does get trapped, you have two other, you know, ideally ball handlers who can then, you know, penetrate, attack the 4-on-3 if they're doubling, you know, things of that nature. So I think that is a lineup that we might see as a potential closing lineup, and definitely we're going to see it throughout the game, those three guards staggered on the court at the same time.
So in terms of deciding those
real quick, Ben, I just want to say, someone in the comments says DeMar Carroll comes from a school.
I see that.
Program, so show him some love.
You know who else comes from there is MPJ, who what was his Snapchat fiasco? Are we going to talk?
Oh, about God.
Okay, no, we won't.
No, let's not go there.
And real quick, while we're on Missouri, I was looking into the old Denver Nuggets that won 50 games and had the 8 seed. And I just wanted to throw out Linus Kleiza, if you remember that guy, Ben.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I remember that was when I first started getting into Missouri, once I knew that I was going to go there. But so one thing I want to get back to as far as the lineups, it's not just who plays, but it's deciding their usage, how they're deployed, at what points. I've been through today cycles in which I woke up more optimistic. We talked about this last night, Roosh, that a lot of Rockets Twitter, assuming that Russ was going to be able to play. And then once you got the Russ news, it's a gut punch, because let's be real, these teams have the same record for a reason. And now you're losing the guy who was a contributor to the Rockets record. And the Thunder have most of their guys that have contributed, and they've actually been the third best team in the NBA since Thanksgiving. Yeah, it's pretty scary. So there's reason for that. However, one way that I've sort of talked myself off the ledge, there's been a few things. First off, I do think Austin Rivers can potentially step up. I also think Roosh has a point about Westbrook defensively might be a little bit more of a liability than we had thought against Oklahoma City. I think there's something to that. And then the other thing that's kind of brought me back, you know, to start the day, I was thinking that the Rockets just had a talent advantage. I know it wasn't there the record, but I just said, look, the Rockets are the better team. Once they're focused, they'll figure it out. Okay. Closer to parity now, even aside from the fact the Rockets do have the best player in James Harden, this is not a talent mismatch anymore. These teams definitely belong on the same court together. It's just going to come down to execution. Now, the Thunder do have a really smart point guard in Chris Paul, but where I really think the Rockets could have an edge in this series, especially if it's close, Mike D'Antoni versus Billy Donovan. I think 2016, 2017, I thought D'Antoni outcoached him in that five-game series. I thought Donovan took a lot of deserved criticism in the last couple of years. Thunder against the Jazz 2 years ago and Quinn Snyder, certainly against the Blazers and Terry Stotts last year. I question a little bit Donovan as a playoff coach, the matchups. Not saying D'Antoni is perfect. I know, Roosh, you're not exactly the biggest fan of MDA, but I do trust him in a playoff environment. Buddy. More than I do Billy Donovan. And so, again, the Donovan factor is mitigated somewhat by Chris Paul, who is as much of a coach on the floor as you will ever have. But in terms of developing the lineups, the feel for the game itself, I know the rotation issues, all of that is true, the depth, all of that is completely fair. But in terms of one-on-one, in-game coaching, deploying the right matchups, gun to my head, I trust Mike D'Antoni more than I do Billy Donovan. And in a close series, that could end up mattering.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that's valid. Billy Donovan has not really performed for the Thunder in the playoffs. I think a lot of Thunder fans are frustrated with him. I do think it's mitigated with Chris Paul, though. And that's kind of what scares me, is Chris Paul has intel on his team. I think he has intel, obviously, on Harden. If there's anyone that's going to know what gets to Harden or how to break Harden down, I think it's got to be Chris Paul. On the flip side of that, you know, I think Harden is an elite competitor, and I think he's going to be, you know, extra driven and motivated by the fact that he is facing Chris Paul. So hopefully we don't see that mentality where he kind of flames out or gets tired. I do fear that we're going to have to lean so heavily on Harden that even if the Rockets pull it out, he's going to be gassed by round two. That is one thing that I'm kind of worried about.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, look, like I said, we're going James Harden with four role players, you know, several journeymen, honestly, against the team that people, I think, are underrating. OKC's good, man. You know, a lot of Rockets fans are kind of laughing it off, like, ah, yeah, right, we'll beat them. But to Ben's point, we have the same record, and Russell Westbrook played for most of the season, and now Russell Westbrook's gone.
I think there's a silver lining, though, to the idea that, you know, say you make it past OKC, you know, say Russ only plays a handful of games, or maybe he doesn't even play the series at all. Worst case scenario, right? He's sitting out the entire series. You know, I think if you make it to an eventual matchup with the Lakers, I think in that matchup, I think Russ is your X factor against that team. I think that, you know, he, like Ben mentioned earlier, you got Russ to deal with the upper echelon type matchups, the Lakers, the Clippers, the Bucks, you know, to have that higher ceiling. And, you know, looking back at the matchups, you know, from earlier this season, thinking back to the very first official game of small ball where Russ dropped, what was it, a whopping, it was 40-something points, 30-something? He had a really monster game against the Lakers, and it looked like they really largely didn't have an answer for him. And now without, you know, without Avery Bradley, without Rajon Rondo, without the added guard depth to try and keep up with Russ, I picture him as being the difference maker in that series. So even if Harden's gassed, come that series, I think if you get Russ back, if he winds up resting, sitting out that entire series, then, or sitting out the entire first round, then you have him locked and loaded, ready to go in that second round. Now, in just a moment, I want to keep this conversation rolling with you guys. But first, I want to drop in a quick word from our friends over at Built Bars. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I used to not be a fan of protein bars. I used to think they tasted pretty gross, honestly. A lot of times they're, you know, grimy, gritty, you know, chewy, too chewy, whatever. And I have never felt that way with Built Bars. I got my first sample pack a couple months ago, and I haven't been working out as much as I need to, but they've got a bunch of different amazing flavors. They're coming out with some new flavors too. My favorite, which I've talked about on this very podcast before, is the double chocolate mousse. Can't go wrong with it. I'm just a chocolate kind of guy all the way. But they're coming out with a bunch of new flavors: caramel brownie, cookies and cream, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. So a bunch of great new flavors. look, they're great for the health conscious person. If you're trying to, you know, lose weight or even maintain weight, or, you know, trying to add bulk, whatever you're trying to do, look, you can do that with Built Bars. And right now at Locked On, we're doing a special offer where if you use the code Locked On at BuiltBar.com, you actually get $10 off your order. They just revamped their entire warehouse. They're coming out with these new flavors. So be sure to check it out at BuiltBar.com and use promo code Locked On for $10 off at checkout. As we're kind of wrapping this up, because we're getting close to 9 o'clock now.
Can I just say one thing, though?
Yeah, go for it. Is it about Built Bars? You help me out.
Protein. No. So I was going to say, as evenly, not, I don't want to say they're evenly matched, because I'm not even sure if the teams are evenly matched necessarily, or if it's just a good matchup. But it's going to come down also to just little things, right? Chris Paul, people are talking in the comments and reminding me that Chris Paul hurt his offhand thumb, I think. I think he jammed
his
thumb.
Left hand thumb.
And so, like, little things like that could make a difference. Also, one thing that actually worries me is most of these games are in the day, or most of the first four games, they're day games. And the Rockets don't really play well in early in the day. Maybe that's just like my eye test remembering. I haven't looked up the numbers, but it seems like every time the Rockets have a, you know, a game at noon or 1 p.m. on a Sunday on ABC, they lose it. I don't know if, you know, Harden just hoops at night better or what, but I think little things like that are also kind of going to play into it. And so
it's a stat buff at night.
So yeah, I just wanted to point that out.
No, for sure. No, and that's a great point. You know, I think remembering, like, right when the schedule dropped, I think the earliest tip off as far as Central Time goes is what, 5:30 p.m. I think. I don't think there's a later tip off.
5:30 is the earliest. It's game one, and then you have a couple of like 2 and 3 o'clock in there, a 5 o'clock. For those asking why, there's only two courts that are approved for playoff use, and they've got to get in, at least while every series is going on, they've got to get in multiple games per day. And of course, because it's the playoffs, they got to make sure that, you know, there's sufficient time in between to clean up, make sure everything is suitable. So one game's got to start early. And honestly, Houston, Oklahoma City, especially the Thunder factor, it's a pretty small market. I think the smallest in the NBA in terms of media. So it's not massive ratings. Russell Westbrook, at least at the beginning of the series, probably isn't going to be out there. So I think that's why the Rockets Thunder gets the short end of the stick. But yeah, because of that, you got to get into multiple games a day per arena. Then yeah, you're going to have some early start times. I think it's good that the Rockets got a couple out of the way this week. They didn't win either of them. Now, of course, Westbrook didn't play the second one along with House. You didn't have Harden's one, and there was no incentive for the Rockets to win in either of those games anyway. They got what they wanted in the 4-5. But I do think it's something that, again, it takes some getting used to. And if nothing else, at least they're going to have a consistency. I think it'd be a lot better, or it's a lot better this way than it would be if they went from
7 p.m.
you know, 8:30 to 2 p.m. for an impactful game two or game three. So it sucks, at least for fans, I think. But I think the players will get used to it pretty quickly.
It'll definitely clean up come the second round, too, because once there's less teams competing and you have more, you know, open time slots for the gyms, then, we'll get back to having some decent, you know, start times instead of the 5:30.
Yeah. By the way, I'm laughing at someone in the comments who says it's because Harden doesn't get home from the strip club until 7 a.m.
Oh, man. That's why he gets a stat buff at night. There you go.
I was going to point out, actually, to correct myself, or maybe I'm an idiot. Is Florida on East Coast time?
Yeah.
Okay, so they're in Orlando. So
yeah, so it is a little bit later. Like, for example, the first game is 6:30 out there.
I've already started automatically. Every single time I see an Eastern time slot now, because everything's in Orlando, I've just started deducting an hour immediately. But we've done our fair share of talking about, you know, the Rockets and things that they have to do, and, you know, things that they have to accomplish to make this series work, especially in the absence of Russell Westbrook, at least for the time being. But I want to know really quickly, which, and I feel like maybe I should say besides Chris Paul, but I won't put that disclaimer on it. Which Thunder player worries you the most? Like, who, looking down this Thunder roster, I know that we've talked about they have a balanced approach to scoring. You know, they've got the four guys that are all averaging close to 19 points a game, and they kind of spread out their scoring across those four guys. But which player legitimately worries you the most? Because for me, we've already talked about it, though. I'm worried about going up against Chris Paul in a grueling potential 6-7 game series. I'm worried about dealing with Chris Paul. I've already harped on this, talking about the fact that, think about all the little all the little winning things that Chris Paul does in basketball games, you know, the rip throughs when you're in the bonus, the, you know, going sneaking behind a big and ripping the ball away from him when he's not paying attention and then taking off to the other end for an easy two. Just all these little things that Chris Paul did for 2 years here in Houston. And now he's going to be doing it against you in a playoff series. I'm not looking forward to it. Like, legitimately, I am going to be distraught at points watching him do these things to the Houston Rockets.
I'm going to say that I'm worried about Gallinari. A couple of people mentioned him in the chat, and this is the type of big, whether he's at the four, whether he's at the five, but someone that has a lot of height that can match up with what the Rockets like to do. One thing that I did not like against the Spurs and the Pacers, they gave up a lot of open corner threes. The communication was not great. Now, I think some of it was the fact that the games had no meaning to the Rockets. There was no real incentive, but if you're giving up those types of open looks, your communication isn't there, and unlike a lot of teams, they've got a big that could actually space the floor and is a reliable shooter, can do a little bit of creating as well. That's tough. I mean, I think the Rockets, in theory, you know, Robert Covington, PJ Tucker, they have the bigs in the front line that can contest, obviously, all the way out to the three-point line. Now, as Roosh says with the Rockets, he's right. Everything is about switching anyway. But Gallinari concerns me. That's the kind of big that can make the Thunder a little more flexible than you might think. I do hope that the Rockets, to some degree, can play Steven Adams off the floor. Not entirely. It won't be an Enes Kanter, you know, can't play Adams the way you can't play Kanter, the infamous clip from Billy Donovan. But I do think that Gallinari gives them some flexibility that a lot of teams in the West might not have, and that's something that they're going to have to account for and hope the defensive communication is always there.
Yeah, that was my answer as well. And to add on to everything you said, which I agree with, he's the only player that they have that commands a double team, that can command a double team. He has the ability to post up. Again, if you go back and what he averaged in the two wins the Thunder had against Houston, he averaged 24 points and 12 rebounds on 50% from three, 7 of 14 from three, I think. And like I said, I didn't go back and watch those games yet, but I remember from memory that he was just backing, I think, PJ down and just shooting over him. And there was really nothing we could do. Now, we didn't have Covington in those games, so the hope is that Covington has enough strength and enough length to not just kind of get back down and shot over. And, you know, last shameless plug, DeMar Carroll has the body type and the strength.
Of course.
You don't have to believe me, but you can get five solid minutes of just defense. Or even maybe Jeff Green. I think Jeff Green is strong enough, and Gallinari is not, you know, he's not fast enough on his feet to beat Jeff Green off the dribble, I don't think. So hopefully those two acquisitions, or those three acquisitions, are exactly the type of player and body type that we can use to guard Gallinari. But yeah, he can command a double team. And if he does command a double team, then it's going to screw the Rockets up, because when the Rockets have to double with the lack of size, it becomes difficult. I think the Rockets are at their best when it's basically 5-on-5, just a bunch of one-on-one matchups across the board. So anything that kind of scrambles that up is problematic. And then I don't think we've talked about him enough, but Dennis Schroeder is a Rocket killer.
Yeah.
He's always been a Rocket killer, even in Atlanta. It's just one of those weird things where Dennis Schroeder goes off, you know? And so who's going to guard Dennis Schroeder? I think Rivers has good perimeter defense and the quicks to guard him. But like we've said, it's not necessarily going to be just a one-on-one thing. So are they going to hunt him out? And I think that one thing we didn't really touch on is without Russ. So look, when the Rockets had Harden and Russ on the floor at the same time, you have two potential defensive liabilities, at least in terms of awareness and just kind of falling asleep. Now Russ is gone. The other person that fits that bill defensively on the Rockets is Ben McLemore. Ben McLemore kind of falls asleep on defense. He's not really a threat defensively when he gets taken to the hole. Even when he moves his feet correctly, I've seen him get bodied off a lot. And, you know, no one really has difficulty scoring on him when they drive to the basket. And I've seen a lot of clips when I go back and watch old games where he just gets put in the pick and roll and they take complete advantage of the Rockets switching everything on the pick and roll. And McLemore is usually a part of that. So I anticipate Chris Paul knows that, and he's going to do, you know, what he can to exploit that. So yeah, Dennis Schroeder, Gallinari, I think those are going to be the X factors. And then I think Lu Dort is going to be a pain in the ass.
If he's healthy, he's
definitely missing game one, correct? I think that was the most
recent. No, he's definitely missing the finale, but a sprained knee does not sound great. So
is that official? Officially sprained knee?
Sprained knee. He's out for the finale. They haven't given any timetable beyond that.
Okay, that could actually be very big for Houston. He's one of those guys. He's much like a DeMar Carroll. He's just a nobody, but he hustles. He can play defense. I'm telling you. I hope we get some DC. But I'm telling you, I mean, look, we always talk about how games are won at the margins, right? Lou Dort is a margin guy. DeMar Carroll is a margin guy. But if Lou Dort is not healthy, you know, he's going to be one of those guys, a scrappy guy that is just going to chase Harden down wherever he goes, waste some fouls, whatever, get in Harden's grill, kind of like a Josh Okogie, kind of like Pat Bev, you know, just one of those scrappy guys that bothers James Harden. So if he's out, I think that's huge.
You know, you mentioned both of you kind of sided with the, you know, talking about Gallinari, and it does make a lot of sense because there's one thing that, you know, and I only just recently learned this term the other day, thanks to, you know, shout out to Ali Kambijani, who is constantly educating everybody on Rockets Twitter about the X's and O's of basketball. One area that they are going to have to be really good at is what it's quote unquote the scram switches, where, you know, anybody who's watched the games, you get used to it, where as soon as there's a, you know, pick and roll or a switch that happens where you've got a guard or a smaller player on one of the bigs, the Rockets do that scram switch where one of the forwards, whoever's guarding the opposing corner, they switch really quickly and they call it out to where you'll have PJ Tucker guarding the opposing corner and then maybe Austin Rivers gets switched onto Gallinari. And then they'll do, if they do the scram switch properly, then PJ and Rivers will switch to where Rivers is then on the guy in the corner and then PJ is the one on Gallinari. So that's going to be, it is imperative that they are on top of that and the communication defensively to not let Gallinari take advantage of them using his size down low, you know, abusing the smaller players, especially, you know, guys like McLemore, who, you know, his communication, his defensive awareness at times might be a little askew. Trying to put it kindly. But, you know, I've also petitioned for so long now that Ben McLemore belongs in the Gerald Green role. And, you know, you plug him in, give him 5, maybe 10 minutes off the bench and run some set plays for him when he comes in the game. That's the part that bothers me, is I don't understand why, when he does check into the game, why they're not immediately running set plays for him every single time down the court. Because having Ben McLemore in the game, and I remember it was, what was it? Maybe the Kings game, where he checked in and in 12 minutes of burn had like one shot attempt or no shot attempts or something like that. And I remember highlighting it, saying there's no reason for him to play if he's not getting 3-point shots up, because then
I completely agree.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you're just exposing yourself defensively. But as you mentioned, Roosh, it does make a lot of sense that now that there's not going to be Russ and Harden, two potential defensive liabilities, which credit to Harden, he's been a lot better in the bubble as of late. He's been a lot more honed in. He's looked like, you know, don't at me, best two-way player in the bubble. Not seriously, but he's been a lot more locked in defensively in the bubble. And that's been encouraging. That's been a great sign. So without Russ out there, you might be able to justify having McLemore and Harden share the court a bit more, because like you said, you're not going to have, at that point, you wouldn't have three defensive liabilities. You just have the two. So I do think that's a, you know, that's an interesting thing. We'll, you know, seeing how many minutes he actually gets, seeing if DeMar Carroll gets any minutes, any actual run in the series is going to be interesting. Now, before we wrap things up, guys, final thoughts, anything you want to throw in here before we close things out?
Yeah. I want to ask, so with Westbrook out, are we going to see, do you think we're going to see seven men strict? Do you think we're going to see an eighth man included in the rotation? And if we do see an eighth man, is it Michael Frazier?
If we see any Michael Frazier minutes in the playoffs, I think everybody is going to.
Everyone will explode. Well, what's funny about this, by the way, everyone has been on D'Antoni for so long about not playing young players. And now he finally plays a young player, and it's Michael Frazier.
The worst possible time. Like, come on.
Yeah, the timing is awful. And Frazier, with all due respect to Mike Frazier, I hate having to dunk on a guy who's trying to make it in the league, so I don't like to do that. But with respect to his place in the rotation, it's not justified at all. He's not a prospect. He's an undrafted tweener combo guard. He's not shooting well. Like, he doesn't do anything.
Yeah, well, I tend to think that it'll be at least eight, because we have seen in the upside, you know, late in the Pacer game, they did use Damari, and that was a game they were pseudo trying to win. But we saw in the second half, Damari getting increasingly more minutes. There's never been a point in which they have been content with seven guys. So I don't think that's going to happen here. We've seen Frazier get looks. We've seen Carroll get looks. I don't know who it will be. Certainly, I hope that it's Carroll. I don't think it's going to be Luke. I think it's pretty clear after seeing Luke that he's not really in shape at this point. simply just doesn't have the fitness unless, well, maybe a few minutes at the five, but you know, at the five, I mean, you've got.
Exactly what I was going to say. He's not in shape to play, but I think he could, I think you could get away with like 4 or 5 minutes at the five.
Yeah. At the five, but then you've got PJ, you've got Jeff. So it's pretty tough to see exactly where he fits in. I just don't see it being eight, because to me, I hope it's Carroll more than Frazier, but they've been pretty insistent to where I don't think you'd see a seven man like what you saw late in the Warriors series 2 years ago. I think it'll be someone. I hope it's Carroll, because, yeah, I just have not seen enough from Frazier to offset his obvious lack of seasoning in his youth.
All right, guys, before we wrap things up officially, I need predictions from both of you, and then I'll share my prediction. No justifications for it. Just give me number of games, who's winning the series. Ben, you go first.
Rockets in six. I've talked myself into it.
Okay. Roosh?
Rockets in seven.
Okay. All right. I want everybody to know that earlier today
he was
saying Oklahoma City in seven. So we have brought him over to the light side. The optimistic Ben, apparently the middle ground Jackson, have converted the pessimist Roosh to Rockets in seven. I am also Rockets in six. I made that claim already in yesterday's podcast or today's podcast, whatever. This is
whatever.
Recording this for ahead of time is strange. Anyways, podcasting, right? So Rockets and six, I'm going with that. Now, as per usual, you guys know the drill. Where can we find all your content at? Roosh, go ahead and go first.
Yeah, I'm pretty much exclusively on Twitter these days, at Roosh Williams, R-O-O-S-H Williams. I also started, I also podcast on Clutch City Control Room, so check that out. And I also started a show, a podcast recently with Zach Noble on Twitter. I'm sorry, well, he's on Twitter. But anyways, it's called The Noble and Roosh Show. So go to Apple, check out The Noble and Roosh Show. We did episode one interviewing Nasir Little of the Portland Trailblazers. So.
All right, and Ben?
Yep, Ben Dubose on Twitter. The Rockets Wire on Twitter, that's the handle for Rockets Wire, which is the USA Today site that covers the Rockets. And then rocketswire.usatoday.com, that's the website. We've got several stories a day. We've got regular availabilities that we're on Zoom calls with Mike D'Antoni, the players from Florida. So rocketswire.usatoday.com, we'll have all sorts of updates throughout the playoffs, and hopefully they go on a while, more than just this one series.
Absolutely.
And real quick, man, shout out to everyone who paid attention and watched.
You're stealing my thunder, guy. I was going to do this. No, go ahead. No, but seriously, for everybody that stopped by, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Hopefully we'll do some more of these live shows in the future if you know it's received well, which based on the turnout, it looks like it was, hopefully, fingers crossed. But that being said, thank you to you guys as well, Ben, Roosh, for being here for this very first live podcast. I hope it went well. I hope everybody had a good time, learned something, had some good chats. Now, if you will do me a favor, and if you enjoy the podcast, if you enjoy the content, do me a huge favor, hit the subscribe button on Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Drop us a review, leave us some stars. It means the world to me. I would sincerely appreciate it. And be sure to check out clutchcitycontrolroom.com, my new Houston Rockets blog, the one that Roosh already plugged a little bit, but be sure to check that out as well. Lots of cool content going on over there. Rockets, another Rockets podcast called the Launchpad Podcast, as well as some Cougars content going up. We're 20 contributors strong now, so be sure to check that out. But for this podcast, that's where we're going to wrap things up. So as always, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.